Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Back to Lunch. Is that actually the show name?
I was listening to Lunch the other day. I had those two idiots made me think I want a song.
Fresh and Keefe on EEI.
Coyle, the tote drive, has Anderson out of the goal, and Jake DeBrusk puts the Bruins on top.
Pastrnak gloves the puck into the attacking zone.
Bergeron scores! Three chances, Hall scores! Fourth effort, cross ice, Marchand scores! Brad Marchand evens the series!
Double-breasted Jack Edwards with a call last night. That's right. Nesson only gets this round. And then after that, no more locals, I do believe.
Yeah, and not even every game, right? Because game one was NBC only. So, yeah, they got this. So Jack's going to make the most of it. That is a promise.
Maximize your minutes.
That's right. Good.
And he is going to be one of those. And hopefully the Bruins keep giving us reason to listen to Jack Edwards and to hear his various calls. We're into the lunch hour with Gresh and Keefe. Pete Blackburn of Bally Sports NHL coverage will be with us in a few short minutes here on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. You can also listen to us wherever you go, WEEI.com or on the Odyssey app. And the Bruins righted the ship last night, 4-3 in overtime. And, Rich, I know we had a ton of people complaining about Rask and this and that with the Bruins. Right. They righted the ship. But I think what last night reminded us is this isn't going to be blowout city. The way the Bruins won last night, it's Agita Central, right? Mm-hmm. Your heart rate's going to go up. You're going to get aggravated. You're going to scream at refs. You're going to scream at the team. But they found a way to get it done last night.
Yeah, they did. And I think one of the we talked to Brian Boucher last week, and one of the stories was the health of the Capitals. Mm-hmm. And I thought that might be a bigger factor. But it seems like Ovechkin's pretty good. It seems like some of the other guys are kind of fine. Like TJ Oshie missed a bunch of games, I think, and they look pretty good. So that part, they still, however, have a big advantage in net. And even if you are
the Bruins,
the Bruins have a huge advantage in net. Yeah. And I think even though about half the people yesterday were complaining about Tuca, I think Craig Anderson, come on. The guy played four games all year, got thrown into it. He's basically their emergency goalie. He got thrown into it in game one, and there wasn't really, he didn't have to do much. And they put a lot more pucks on him in this game, and you saw him break through. And I think who scored and who played well was really important for the Bruins, too, because now Jake DeBrusk and Coyle look like they might have something going on the third line. Taylor Hall is able to score a goal, and then you have, you know, Brad Marchand getting the game winner, Patrice Bergeron with a great goal after really being a non-factor on that end of the ice in game one. And then Tuca, again, you're going to have the haters say, well, the one puck kind of squirted through him there. That's the problem on him. But you know what? He was good. That sounds like most Tuca people, right?
Well, yeah.
What's going on with Tuca Rask? How come he's still out there? He's a bum.
Has Tuca ever stolen a game?
He's not once. I've never seen him stolen a game. He has 52 wins in the playoffs now. And yet apparently they were all 6-5.
That's right.
So I thought he was good. And so, but one concerning thing was, you just lose a game in overtime, and then you show up game two. The first 3 minutes, the Bruins looked like they were a mess. And if it wasn't for Tuukka Rask, they might have been down 2-0 in a blink of an eye. But Tuukka makes a bunch of really good saves. DeBrusk gets the goal, and you're like, all right, now you're kind of cooking. A high-scoring first period. You know, it was 2-2. And then the other takeaway was the refs really stepping in and making sure nothing crazy happens. And to me, it's the Tom Wilson effect. They don't want to see this thing get carried away. And obviously, they call him with the embellishment. But even before that, you know, Dowd, they called for roughing. And even as a Bruins fan, I'm like, that wasn't roughing. Like, what are they doing?
It was questionable.
And then Brad Marchand. I mean, again, they're all kind of on the line. And I always wonder why refs, like, there are certain things after the whistle that they let go. They're like, all right, enough, break it up. And then other times, they're like, both of you, you're done.
And that's what happened there.
Play. Yeah, so I don't really get it, although they were pretty consistent. They were trying to make sure that there was none of that stuff after the whistle last night.
And Marshy almost.
I know.
Like, he was right on the edge. I'm sure you watched, you know, because when these things were, like, legal back then, the old Bugs Bunny cartoons every once in a while,
yeah,
where
Bugs Bunny.
He'd, like, draw the line in the sand or walk right to the edge of the cliff and stand there. That, to me, was Brad Marchand last night.
Yeah.
He went right to the edge of the cliff and then, like, turned around and took it and walked it backwards. And I know that he had mentioned, meaning Brad Marchand, had mentioned after the game that normally Bergie comes over and gets me. When he got the stick up around the face of the Caps player around the ref, I thought, here it is. He's going to get a 4-minute. Like, he's going to get the it's double close. Minor or a major here, and he didn't.
And even when he was down there, like, when he got by Anderson in the goal and he's getting shoved down and he got up and he pushed a guy.
Yeah, that penalty was not smart, but he also got kneed in the ribs.
They were laying on top of him. But I also think what was a problem was when he kind of threw like a mini little cross check, the ref was so close, and the ref got kind of pushed back. So, like, what are you going to do? Like, at that point, the ref's like, all right, dude. Like, you can't.
Right, you can't make contact with me. Of course, I've got to give you the business here.
So I think it was a little bit of that. But for him to score the game winner, I think it's going to be huge for him. And I think for that entire line. Because that was one of the questions. That was one of the real legitimate beefs after game one.
It was
the Tuca thing was like ended up hijacking the Bruins conversation, and it was really more of like a red herring where it was the top line, like, all right, if it's gonna be a disappearing act from them, they're in trouble. And then so for Marchand to break through like he did, that's huge.
And the first line played well. Taylor Hall keeps banging away.
Yeah.
And who would have thought that Jake DeBrusk would have been maybe the most productive Bruin in the first two games of this series?
I mean, he's on a pace to have more playoff goals than regular season goals.
It's amazing.
This is kind of where he's at.
It really is. And by the way, Cassidy rewarded him with extra ice time in the first period, almost sending the message that, look, if you're in those bottom two lines and you start stirring it up and playing well, he'll move you up and give you some time.
And I think you got to give Cassie a lot of credit for that part of it too, where, you know, he'll take DeBrusque out of the lineup, he'll put him in there on the fourth line, he'll take Coyle, put him on a wing, put Coyle back in at center. So I think those guys, I think, are more motivated now too, and maybe you'll get a more productive third line out of it.
Bruce Cassidy talked about Jake DeBrusque,
and I just think Jake responded very well too. And, you know, Jake was good the other night, so we talked to him as well. Like, listen, you know, you keep pushing in second effort and, you know, working on your reloads and just second effort hockey, that, you know, your minutes are going to increase. And, you know, they did tonight and really had the game on a stick again late. But I thought played hard, played like Jake played in the past. And, you know, obviously we're going to be a better team when he does that.
Like he played in the past, huh?
Well, the good DeBrusque. He straight up called out his effort like a few times.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm thinking of is that he's been put on blast by Bruce Cassidy, and now
Ride the hot streak.
Yeah. I hope they don't have a love-hate relationship. I hope it's just more Bruce reacting to DeBrusque whenever he plays well. Joining us now on the Harbor One Hotline, covers the NHL for Bally Sports, and he does the Brunch podcast with DJ Bean. Pete Blackburn joins Gresh and Keefe here on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. And Pete, let's start with this. How hard were you laughing, or what were the thoughts going through your mind yesterday with people reacting and talking about the way Tuukka Rask played on Sunday?
I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, if you've been here long enough, you know how it goes. And just, you know, there's a certain contingency of people that are always going to look at Tuukka Rask and search for reasons to blame him. And it drives me crazy. But I think at the outset of this year's playoffs, I was like, I know it's going to happen. I'm not going to let it bother me. And so Saturday, I was fine. Yesterday kind of drove me crazy because Kevin Miller had the worst pinch that I've ever seen in my life. And yet somehow that became Tuukka Rask's fault. And, you know, I thought that the Bruins were going to lose that game. And then people were going to blame him and say that he can't make the big save or whatever. Kevin Miller had an awful game and made one of the worst pinches that I've ever seen. And it led to a goal. And luckily, you know, they were able to survive that. But Tuukka Rask was really good at the beginning of yesterday's game in terms of just limiting the damage, because the Caps were a much better team out of the gate than the Bruins were yesterday.
Oh, they definitely were. And that would have been all forgotten had they ended up losing, you know, 3-2 or something like that. It would have been forgotten. Gresh and I both found ourselves really defending Tuukka yesterday just because of the onslaught of negativity early on. I am curious, though, in your mind, Pete, is there a scenario outside of injury where the team would turn to Swayman, or is it just you're in the playoffs, it's just Tuukka the rest of the way?
No, so this is where I'm at this year, and I think it's for the first time ever where I think that if Tuukka Rask doesn't play well, you go to Swayman. And, you know, that's how close it is. I've been really impressed with Swayman, and, you know, I think that in the past couple of years, we've seen true contenders usually have two good goalies, and if one doesn't play well, they go to the other one because you have to ride the hot hand. And I think Swayman is a guy that can handle it. I don't think that I would feel the same way if it was Yaroslav Halak behind him, because we kind of have seen what Yaroslav Halak is eventually. And I wouldn't feel super comfortable just waiting for that to happen. But I think Swayman could be the guy. But here's the thing. I like Swayman, but I don't like when people are just sitting waiting for a reason to put the blame on Tuukka Rask. And those people exist. And, you know, game one, he did not lose the Bruins game one. They were awful offensively. And I don't think that you can look at the way that Tuukka Rask has played in this series and say that any of this is really his fault. I think that, you know, yesterday you probably would have liked to see him make a save on the shot from, was it Orlov? The one that trickled through his five hole from pretty deep. But you look at the goals that he surrendered in the series, pretty much every single one of them has been the product of a redirection or traffic in front, a screen. You know, he hasn't really given up all that many soft goals. So just seeing people reach for reasons to say, put Swayman in, Rask stinks, that bothers me. But I am willing to say that, like, if Tuukka Rask isn't playing well, he should sit on the bench.
Pete Blackburn of Bally Sports here with Gresh and Keefe talking some NHL. He joins us on the Harbor One Hotline. What was the difference for the first line game one to game two, in your opinion, Pete?
Putting pucks on net, mostly. Yeah. I mean, game one, not a whole lot in terms of being able to generate. And I think that yesterday was, for a good portion of that game, it was kind of frustrating as well, because they were carrying play and driving play and dominating possession, but they weren't really creating all that many great opportunities until late in the game. And so, you know, obviously you had the unbelievable shot from Bergeron off the front at the front of the first period. And that was huge for Bergeron and the team, because you needed to jump out early. And I think Bergeron had one of his worst games in game one, just in terms of offensive generation. So, you know, I think that the top six was a message received from Bruce Cassidy after game one. He outright said that they needed to be better. And, you know, knowing what we know about this team's depth, if the top six isn't generating, isn't producing, this team is screwed, because the depth is not great behind them in the bottom six. So it was nice to see that message was received, and you know, those top two lines were really, really good yesterday.
What do you think of the Chara factor so far? He had the big hit on Corrali, and obviously he's out there killing off penalties. He's a third pairing defenseman right now, but through two games, what are your thoughts on Chara?
Well, I think it's you look at it and you say, well, it'd be nice to have a guy like that, especially when you look at, I mentioned it before, but traffic in front of Tuukka has been a problem in the series. And watching, you know, guys like Matt Grizzlick trying to clear out the slot has been kind of tough to watch. And you look at it and you say, well, it certainly would be nice to have a guy who's a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, and can clear out that traffic. And, you know, again, they chose Kevin Miller over Zdeno Chara essentially the last offseason. And Kevin Miller didn't look great yesterday, I'll say that. So it would be nice to have the big guy on the other side, I think, through the first couple of games.
Pete, was there anything from the Caps side of things that stood out to you that you think will change now playing in Boston in terms of line changes, combinations, things of that nature? Or is it just, all right, we got the second, you know, we got the, they get to react to the line change now. Here we go, saddle up and play two more games.
I don't know if they're going to overreact or overcorrect. Obviously, you know, they didn't get the effort that they wanted out of some of their top guys in game two, just like the Bruins didn't get it out of them in game one. I think that you kind of just show some faith and think that those guys are going to show up. I mean, Alex Ovechkin was essentially a non-factor for most of that game, and credit goes to Connor Clifton, who had the most minutes against Alex Ovechkin yesterday. So that was pretty encouraging if you're a Bruins fan. But I think that you look at it, Ovechkin's going to be better. I think honestly the biggest thing that might be flying under the radar after yesterday's game is the loss of Lars Eller if he can't play moving forward, because this team is already pretty thin at center or natural centers. So Lars Eller has been a big piece for them, especially getting the matchups that they want and being able to counter the Bruins top six and being able to match up against them. So if Lars Eller can't go, that could be a huge, huge loss for the Caps.
McAvoy played almost 27 minutes yesterday. And yes, they went to overtime, but the overtime didn't last very long. Where is he ballpark in the league right now amongst all defensemen? Because I feel like for a while, amongst young defensemen, he's obviously one of the best. But just overall defensemen, where is McAvoy rank?
It's interesting because I've had this conversation with people outside of Boston, and a lot of them love him. And then, I personally love him, and I think that he's trending towards, possibly being a Norris caliber guy. And so, I've said that. I've said I think that he's probably top 10, creeping towards top five-ish defenseman in the league. And I've gotten a good amount of pushback from people outside of Boston. So I don't know if it's maybe me overrating him, seeing him on a nightly basis, or it's just people who don't get to see him on a nightly basis sort of underestimating him, or just kind of looking at numbers on a page and it not translating. But McAvoy has been just a monster for this team, and a godsend for a team that kind of abandoned, or, and I don't want to say abandoned, but is transitioning into a new era of the blue line. McAvoy has been unbelievable, and he was a monster yesterday. Just absolute, dominant performance from McAvoy yesterday. So I love him, and I think that he has been a huge, huge, huge piece for this team.
Well, we were talking about that yesterday. You go back to the Cup team, and Chara and Seidenberg, are the stuff of legends. And then now your top pairing is McAvoy Grizzlick. So you can win both ways, but I don't know how much different. I mean, they couldn't be more different, the two of those.
Well, the biggest thing is for me is that I don't think that Bruce Cassidy has a ton of confidence or a ton of trust in his defensive pairs, and that has sort of been an issue. And because of that, you need McAvoy to be all world and be at his best, because if he's there, it doesn't matter who's on the other side of him. I think Bruce is going to trust him to get the matchups that he wants and be able to shut down some of the opponent's top talent. So I think that the trust needs to be built up from the other defensive pairs, but I also think that McAvoy needs to keep playing at a top-tier level for this team to have a chance.
I'm curious for your thoughts, Pete, just overall on Taylor Hall, the difference from Buffalo to here, the way he's played, the way he's looked in the postseason. Is this a guy that you think the Bruins maybe have to make priority number one in terms of re-signing in the offseason?
I do. I mean, it obviously depends on cost. And, given the way that he's been playing here, and, it probably helps that he just came from Buffalo, where it seemed like he was absolutely miserable. But I think that you might be able to get him at under market value. And that's something that Bruce Cassidy or that Don Sweeney has been really good at, in terms of getting guys to buy in and stick here for maybe less than they would have gotten on the open market. So maybe he does that with Taylor Hall, but I've been extremely impressed with what he's been since he's gotten here. And, I think that he is everything that they wanted him to be. And I've been impressed with his compete level. And I think that a lot of people before he got here sort of misread his game. And I think that I'm in that group as well. I think there is sort of a misunderstanding that Taylor Hall is this guy who's a scorer and he's only got an offensive game. But since arriving here, he's been incredible just in terms of vision and passing the puck and just being a playmaker, also scoring goals, obviously, but being a really, really good all-around player. And, you know, he's back-checking. He's showing effort all the time. And he looks really, really invested. So that's what you want. And I don't see, especially after, you know, the struggles that you've had trying to find one of those elite wingers that you can slot in next to a guy like Krejci on the second line and actually have two really, really good lines. I don't understand why you would let that guy walk if it's not cost prohibitive.
Well, speaking of that, and I know this is probably more of an off-season question, but do you think this is the last run for Krejci and Rask, the two highest-paid players on the team, obviously up there in age and going to be free agents? Do you think either or both are gone?
Well, I think in Rask's case, it's up to the team. Like, if the team wants to keep him and is willing to pay, I don't know. I don't think that he's obviously not going to make as much money as he is now, and I would ideally look at like a 2-year deal. And if he's willing to do that, I and the team is willing to do that, I think he'll be here and transition into the Swayman era. But you know, I think it's more of a case of Tuukka Rask doesn't really want to go anywhere. I think that he's right. Kind of a guy that's like, well, all my stuff's here, so I don't really want to move anywhere else. Uh-huh. The Krejci thing is more interesting to me because, you know, he has expressed interest in going back home and playing, you know, in Europe after his contract is done. So I don't know if that changes now that he's got a Taylor Hall on his side. I don't know if that would be a big factor into that decision for him, but I think it's more likely that this is Krejci's last run than it is Rask's last run, because I think that the team knows that there's value in having two really, really good goaltenders.
Pete Blackburn, National NHL. He covers the NHL for Bally Sports. You could follow Pete on Twitter, at Pete Blackburn, and on Twitch, twitch.tv/Pete Blackburn. You could catch him twitching just like us, twitch.tv/Boston WEEI. Just go twitch.tv/Pete Blackburn and you could see all his work. And of course, the Listen to Brunch podcast with Pete and DJ Bean. Awesome stuff, Pete. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Congrats on the gig.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Pete.
I think with Chara and Krejci, I think the thought process is almost the same in terms of Don Sweeney, right? When do you rip the Band-Aid off, basically? And yeah, that isn't that more like, I know that Krejci might want to stay here. He might want to, but in a way, doesn't the decision almost have to be made by management to say, we need to let you go so that we can move on?
Yeah, I think it's kind of similar to both Chara and, even though he was much younger, Torrey Krug, where, all right, you want to make some changes to your roster, but rather than finding some sort of trade, it's just, all right, these guys come up to the end of their deals and see you later. We'll offer you something. If you want to play at, you know, half of what you were making the year
before. The Belichick rate.
Yeah, basically. And they're in a pretty good position of power. And I agree with Pete, because everything you hear about Tuukka is he wants to play for the Bruins. And I could see him retiring or playing for the Bruins. And I bet, I shouldn't say I bet, because when it comes to money, that definitely makes things difficult. But if you convince him that, listen, you're the number one goalie, but you're going to be playing half the time, you're going to be splitting, I don't know if he's going to command $7 million a year again. And Krejci certainly isn't going to get that kind of money again.
No.
So,
God, no.
And maybe you're talking about 1 or 2 year deals anyway.
And does Tuukka look at the way Halak handled things as the eventuality of the way he will have to handle things? Like, we know that he's on the back nine,
right?
And he's been with a guy who has been nothing but professional. And I would dare say that for, well, some teams in the NHL, Juro Halak could probably start for some teams
the
league.
Yeah, he definitely would.
But
yeah,
he's chosen to be here, right, and play the role that has been given to him. And will Tuukka Rask be that amenable? Because I've always thought that, especially with the European players, that once they get to the back nine and the money goes down, that they're like, all right, unplug, go home,
yeah,
go make, you know, like, how many years are we going to hear about Alex Ovechkin getting $12 million a year in tax-free money offered to him to go play in, like, the Russian league?
Oh,
you would have
there.
To think there are leagues who would be interested in guys like Krejci and Rask and people like that.
Oh, definitely.
And it screws up the cost structure in the NHL. But again, Don Sweeney is at the point to where the age of those players has got to be a part of that decision long term. Good job by Pete Blackburn, by the way. What a microphone.
God, sounds better than us.
Man, yeah, that's great. Unbelievable.
He streams all the time, so he has to have a good setup.
We should all do the show from Pete's house, it sounds like.
All just do Twitch from our own houses, because Davey's done that before. Yep. Shime did that once as well, and Pete. So.
All right, twist my arm. I'll do it at home.
Yeah, right. Fine. I don't have to drive 60 miles and deal with the pinheads or dumping cars into the guide rail on the pike. Yeah, I could be talked into that. Oh, there was one today.
Sweet. Yeah, you had an issue today.
Oh, as soon as I saw the two fire trucks and a meat wagon merging in, I'm like, oh, boy.
It's a problem.
There's some sort of issue going on. Yep. And then, 15 minutes later and a Wigonomics lesson later on the Greg Hill show.
Yeah, that
Wiggy's economics. Wigonomics was interesting.
I was trying to still figure out that. It didn't seem the whole supply and demand. I'm not sure if he gets it.
I agree. Well, I agree. Hopefully
unpack that at a later date.
We may. I think Greg unpacked it a lot today.
There's not much left.
There was a lot there. Yeah, exactly. Right. It was a short unpacking, but a long discussion on where to put everything.
Sounds like at times Greg really is waiting for that third host to join the show.
Yeah, what is the deal on that?
It's a lot of one-on-one with
You put Shime in there, for God's sake.
Spaz is chomping at the bit.
Spaz is,
he can sit right there. He can move right in, grab one of these seats in here.
You know, they used to do the whole thing with the chairs.
Musical chairs,
right. That's what they should do. They should just put Spaz and Shime in a room, one chair, and then let them do the whole musical chairs thing and see what happens.
And then Curtis will give it to himself.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
We all know that's the angle here.
From the top rope. Mm-hmm.
That is...
Curtis is like actually...
get you some heat, brother.
He's actually interviewing other producers just so he can slide in here.
Well, Curtis would be the one who would kick the chair out from both of them as they go to sat down. Right. And then Shime would fall on Spaz, and then it'd be a lawsuit and it'd turn into a big deal.
Real
and
problem.
Shime would own his house.
That'd be nice.
That'd work out for him.
Sell houses. That house and get an even bigger house.
Oh, there we go. Look at you.
Or Crash and Keith right now on WEEI. It's time for Kiefer Madness.
Kiefer Madness.
Richard Keefe, I think it is. Rich Keefe.
Who is that?
How you doing, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Joshua Adams.
What now?
Kiefer Madness.
Where is Keefe?
Hey, Keefe, you're a douche.
I was doing Junko Inoshima from Danganronpa.
I'm a firm believer in UFOs and Sasquatch.
That's funny.
Yo, Kiefer Madness is so hit or miss.
Keefe's a nice guy.
Keefe's a nice guy. Okay.
Kiefer Madness?
It's Kiefer Madness with Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
I bring it.
They are called UAPs, or Unidentified Aerial Phenomena.
From what I hear you guys saying, there's something.
Yes. There's definitely something that, I don't know who's building it, who's got the technology, but there's something out there that was better than our airplane.
And Congress wants to know what they are. 60 Minutes tonight on CBS.
It's noon 30 on a Tuesday. That means it's time for Kiefer Madness here on Gresh and Keefe. And as you heard there, a little snippet from 60 Minutes this weekend, where they discussed UFOs in great detail, and nobody seems to care. Nobody's talking about this. UFOs, which some people out there still don't believe exist, like Andy Gresh, the government is like, they exist.
Well,
we
UFOs,
know they exist.
Because you know what it is? When I think of UFOs, it's the whole, they're manned by space aliens, and if you don't believe in aliens...
Or maybe they're not. It could be remote control for all we know.
Then it'd be a drone.
It could be, but it's unidentified. A drone is identified. So these are unidentified, and by the government is saying, yes, they exist. In fact, there is a man you're going to hear from here, Luis Elizondo, who was a 20-year veteran of covert military intelligence operations. What are you laughing about?
No, it's just really funny.
What are you laughing about?
This guy, like, his job was to be covert, and now let's blow it out.
Well, he doesn't work there anymore. He's a former.
I gotcha.
But no, because the government also, he didn't blow the whistle on this. The government is like, yeah, they exist. But it happened last year during like the height of the pandemic. And so people kind of ignored it and started talking about other things. Now everybody's more concerned about, you know, how many views they got on TikTok or how many likes they got on Instagram.
Yeah, that's right.
There are UFOs out there.
Because being popular on social media is like being Monopoly rich.
But this
matters.
This could be dangerous. This could be the end of Earth. And people are like, ah, nobody cares. And you got people like Gresh laughing about it. It's like, we can't defend ourselves against the aliens.
Come on, we got can't. The Terranite or whatever in New Hampshire. We
Terranite
can blow them up.
Wouldn't do a thing. So let's go, let's hear a little bit from Luis.
So what you're telling me is that UFOs, unidentified flying objects, are real.
Bill, I think we're beyond that already. The government has already stated for the record that they're real. I'm not telling you that. The United States government is telling you that.
So stick that up your pipe there, Gresh, and smoke that one.
Luis Elizondo spent 20 years running military intelligence operations worldwide in Afghanistan, the Middle East, and Guantanamo. He hadn't given UFOs a second thought until 2008. That's when he was asked to join something at the Pentagon called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, or ATIP.
The mission of ATIP was quite simple. It was to collect and analyze information involving anomalous aerial vehicles, what I guess in the vernacular you call them UFOs. We call them UAPs.
You know how this sounds. It sounds nutty, wacky.
Look, Bill, I'm not telling you that it doesn't sound wacky. What I'm telling you, it's real. The question is, what is it? What are its intentions? What are its capabilities?
See, Gresh sounds a lot like the interviewer who very narrow-minded and oh, this sounds wacky and everything else. Like,
that's right.
Open up your mind just a little bit. We have a couple more people here as well. This is Lieutenant Commander Alex Dietrich and Commander Dave Fravor.
He is a commander.
See, this is not productive at all.
I won't be nice.
Now you're doing alien voices.
Speaking of closed-minded.
That's what I just said.
I know.
Has Shime listened to any of the show today?
I think Shime's got the
John
show.
Wins the day.
Like, has he listened to any of the program?
I'm backing you up.
Shime's on a 10-second delay today easily.
Yeah, he's on Twitch. He's probably on Twitch. He's on the
Sorry, God, guys. I'm on a 10-second delay.
All right, let's talk about something serious here
okay,
for a minute.
Okay, let's be serious about UFOs.
The threat that is out there that any day they could just take over and destroy us.
It was November 2004, and the USS Nimitz Carrier Strike Group was training about 100 miles southwest of San Diego. The advanced new radar on a nearby ship, the USS Princeton, had detected what operators called multiple anomalous aerial vehicles over the horizon, descending 80,000 feet in less than a second. Fravor and Dietrich, each with a weapons system officer in the back seat, were ordered to investigate and found an area of whitewater in an otherwise calm blue sea. It appeared to them that an object about the size of a 737 was just under the water.
So, as we're looking at this, her backseater says, "Hey, Skipper, do you?" And about that got out, I said, "Dude, do you see that thing down there?" And we saw this little white, tic-tac-looking object, and it's just kind of moving above the whitewater area.
Do you ever drop your phone and it sort of bounces off the countertop and then bounces off something else and it sort of... Like no predictable movement, no predictable trajectory.
Yeah.
It was just
like a ping pong ball.
No acceleration.
Very, very random. No
acceleration.
As Dietrich circled above, Fravor went in for a closer look.
So you're sort of spiraling down?
Yep. The tic-tac still pointing north-south. It goes and just turns abruptly and starts mirroring me. So as I'm coming down, it starts coming up.
So it's mimicking your moves.
Yeah, it was aware we were there. I want to see how close I can get. So I go like this, and it's climbing still. When it gets right in front of me, it just disappears.
Disappears?
Disappears. Like gone.
And you saw no visible propulsion, right.
no
wings or anything to make it fly in our atmosphere?
No, actually, when it turned and started coming up, it was kind of like, okay. Because we have nothing that goes that fast and just starts climbing at will.
I mean, folks... What we are dealing with here is something that is so far advanced from us technology-wise that we, if they decided that they just wanted to take over Earth, they could. And it would happen so easily.
They would never conquer Elon Musk. He's one of them.
They are thousands of years ahead of where Elon Musk would be. If Elon Musk lived another 1,000 years, he might get to where they are technology-wise.
Then why don't these people monetize it?
What do you mean? What people?
Or aliens or whatever.
What are aliens going to do with American dollars, Gresh? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
But
how come they're not down here stealing gold?
But why don't they show themselves?
They don't need any of our stuff. Do you go and talk to ants? You go like, hey, ants, what are you guys doing today? No, they have no interest in us.
Depends on if it's Aunt Liam.
They've already... No. Well, you can call Aunt Liam if you want on the phone. But these creatures are so far past where we are that they probably came down, saw what it was, like, all right, there's a lot of water here, whatever. If we need it, we can come back here. They're out zipping around in other places.
And how do you know they haven't already infiltrated our society Correct. To the point where they control us already?
How do you know they haven't mind wiped you? How do you know that every day they mind wipe you?
Men in Black style.
We could learn about them every single day.
Now
and
it's
then,
like
boom,
Groundhog Day. Wipe waking them. Up, same it mind wipe, boom, there you go.
It could happen.
You never know, Gresh.
I think it's a real real threat, though, and people don't care.
No, I don't.
Zero cares.
Gresh doesn't care.
Because these are the people that look down and see humans picking up poop from dogs. They probably think dogs run the planet.
Well, they probably think that, yeah, we're so... I mean, and they also see us all killing each other, and they're like, all right, well, these talk about a non-threat.
It's almost
talk about not worried about earthlings.
It's almost statistically impossible for us to be the only living Correct. Life
oh,
in
my
the
God.
Entire universe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because these ships aren't just creating themselves and flying around. No. Like, there's either somebody in there or they're controlling them further away or whatever. But they probably know everything they need to know about Earth, and they're like, all right, we're good. That's the one hope, actually, that you would have. Because if they're ever like, yeah, we kind of want to take this spot over. Done. Done.
A texter said it's probably just their reflection off the water.
Well, that one lady kind of took us down a road that didn't really help. Like, hey, I don't want you to drop your phone.
The
and
tic-tac
like, kick,
thing.
Kicks around. Like, huh? What do you mean? Drop your phone. Get a case. I don't know. But anyway, it's the real deal here. The absolute real deal. Here's a little bit more.
Seconds later, the Princeton reacquired the target 60 miles away.
So in a matter
like
of...
Like that.
Yeah, it just appeared there.
Mm-hmm. In seconds.
Yeah.
It was 60 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Later, another flight crew encountered what they believed to be the same object and briefly locked onto it with a targeting camera before it zipped off again.
They didn't get a visual on it, but they did get this FLIR footage, the forward-looking infrared.
So you've got the infrared image.
Right. Yes.
And your eyesight.
Yes.
And the Princeton.
The radar.
All saying there is something out there.
Yes.
So they can't identify it. They don't know what it is. All they know is that it does things that nothing that is created by human can do.
I've been told the last 4 years not to believe the government. That's why I don't believe them now.
Okay. All right.
Like Castan,
believe what you want.
The government.
That's fine.
The government.
Uh-huh.
But do you really think these people are taking stock of people like you who believe and me who don't? And that somehow these supposedly smarter than us creatures are going to take out us non-believers?
No, they would just take everybody out. Whether you believe in them or not, if they wanted to, they would just take everybody out.
They may just want the planet for themselves.
I'm just saying, keep your head on
wipe us all.
Keep your head on a swivel out there.
So when did this supposedly genius society of aliens begin? And why have they not seized our society already if we've been in existence for all these years?
They don't probably need it.
You don't go seize every animal you see. You study
right.
it.
Right.
But if these people have been out there allegedly forever, then at what point does one wake up and go, I'm taking it all?
Yeah, but time could also move differently where they're from.
True. They could use space-time as movement.
Yeah.
This guy over
like, here. Gresh, like, thinks it's funny. Like, it's not funny.
It's just science, Gresh.
Yeah, it's just science.
Oh, man. I understand the concept of the unidentified flying object. The problem is, for the majority of people that I think are maybe either non-believers or even some who do, that these unidentified flying objects have, like, little people or whatever inside of
them.
Or people controlling them.
Well, they
must. And that's where, like, could there be something flying around that someone sees? Sure, they don't know. Some pilot might have been drinking or whatever.
This isn't you or me or Shine out in our deck being like, I don't know what that is. And then they're like, oh, it's a plane, you idiot. No, these are all people that are involved in the military and, like, levels of intelligence so far beyond us. And they've actually been told to study it. And they're like, I don't know what that is. That's a lot different than just, oh, is it a helicopter? Is it a satellite? I don't know. These people don't know what it is. So if UFOs exist vis-a-vis aliens.
Can't wait to hear Joe Biden's press conference on the aliens. It'll be great.
Well, next month, I believe they're going to have some more information. I think it was, like, the government's going to, I don't know if it's Biden himself, but somebody's going to be talking about it next month. There's going to be more stuff on it. And nobody's going to care. They're going to be like, oh, are the Bruins
right.
still alive?
That's
okay.
right.
Just going to ignore it.
So... eyes open on this one.
There's your key for madness.
That's right.
The UFO-related key for madness. We're going to have to do just like a segment on where people are at on this.
Well, it's pretty
clear. Do you
clear.
Think there are more believers?
Shine believes. John believes.
Are there more believers than non-believers? I think I'm in the majority on
the
this.
The burden of proof at this point is on the non-believers to prove that they aren't real.
Right? Oh, yeah, because
because the evidence is overwhelming. Because
everybody takes the government at their word in terms
of
their
validation.
It's way more than the
government. People believe this before the government said it.
Right.
Ask Tom DeLonge.
Mm-hmm. Tom DeLonge was all over
Where are you?
That's right.
That was a UFO call, too, from before. You know.
I'll wait for the Demi Lovato feature on UFOs. Thank you, Shime.
That may not help us. That may not help our cause, but I'll give it a shot.
The government, the UFOs, and Demi Lovato. Mm-hmm. Stuff you never thought you would get with Gresham Kiefer on WEEI and the WEEI Sports Radio Network. And if you forgot about Kwame Brown, we're going to reintroduce him into your life next.
Why do you think an alien would wear a wig?
I think for aesthetic reasons.
Wherever you're working from, Gresham and Keefe go where you do. Download the Odyssey app or ask your smart speaker to play WEEI.
You running your mouth talking about somebody like me? Boy, you need to stop, boy. I done told you. You done stepped in that goddamn quicksand, boy. I don't gotta lie and make up. The only joke you got, boy, when is this basketball joke gonna run out? You keep hitting me with basketball jokes. I keep hitting you with your real soft-ass, punk-ass life. Now, which one didn't like you, boy? Your granddaddy that was black or your granddaddy that was white? Because there's some deep issues in you, boy.
Woo! Remember former number one pick of the Washington Wizards when Michael Jordan was there? Kwame Brown? That's who that was right there. Yes. Spitting hot fire.
Yep. One of the worst.
Matt Barnes.
One of the worst number one overall picks.
He was a high school guy, too.
High school guy. Ended up having a longer career than what you might have thought.
12 years?
From 01 was he was drafted. Through 13.
Made like $70 million.
Averaged, you know, 6.5 points, 5.5 rebounds. So stayed in the league for a while, made a lot of money. But yeah, he was, as far as number one picks go, was pretty bad. Not Anthony Bennett bad.
No, but bad. Still pretty bad. And that's him clapping at Matt Barnes, because Matt Barnes does a podcast where he's blasting all kinds of people. And
Matt Barnes will say some stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kwame Brown wasn't playing.
No, and, just not.
Kwame Brown was doing his best, like Bernie Mac right there. And then he sang... Dude,
he sang.
He sings a song to Matt Barnes. This is gold.
Some ate your food. Some Derek Fisher done open your door to your house. Derek Fisher got your key to your truck. You bitch ass. Send some gas money so you can pick them kids up.
That's the best line of the whole thing. Send some gas money to pick them kids up. That's great.
Gas money so you can pick them kids up.
I don't know what Kwame Brown's real beef is. I didn't even know he was, like, still existing. I thought he, like, sort of just went into the wilderness like a Sasquatch.
He was done a while ago. But people who don't know, Derek Fisher ended up... I don't know if he's married to now or he's going out with Matt Barnes' ex.
That's right. There was a whole kerfluffle there.
And Matt Barnes actually, speaking of driving, Matt Barnes drove there to confront Derek Fisher. And there was a whole beef between those two. But so Kwame Brown's bringing that up. What did Barnes say about Kwame?
I think there was a little bit of the constant jabbing of Kwame Brown at being a bad basketball player. And when Kwame Brown clapped back at Barnes and others, he went down the road of, like, the infidelity, the tattoos, all of the stuff that you would expect there's no other way for me to say this, like a typical kind of like white person from the South would say about an NBA player, especially like if you were in the 90s, right? But Kwame Brown was like cracking those dudes
for all that
and then
stuff.
He went into the and then there's a big kerfluffle there between them.
Wow.
But man, that like of all of a sudden, it's like Kwame Brown off the top rope.
And was that just on his Instagram or something, or his Twitter? Is that where you got that from?
I don't even remember where we found that, John. I know it was
That was from a Complex article, but I believe so. This is from the New York Post. In his explanation, Gilbert Arenas called Brown a quote show pony whose talents were overshadowed by his lack of confidence in Michael Jordan's shadow. And Brown, so that video those two clips that we have played. Brown has since responded in a curse-filled hour-long video on YouTube.
Wow!
So I played a minute 30. I found a minute 30 clip that was on Twitter.
That was an hour?
Oh.
You should call me on the show.
Oh, we can't. No way.
We'd have to tape it, and I'd have to spend 3 hours censoring it.
Okay. Keith, seriously?
It'd be worth it.
I don't want to do work.
Just Sean, tell him, hey, you're on the radio, so just don't swear.
We said that with Ty Law, and you know how that went.
Yeah, John and I listened to a minute 30 before the show.
And it just couldn't even.
And he was like, well, we can take 30 seconds of this and make it work. It was filled with, you name it, it was in there.
An hour?
Oh, yeah.
Just talking into his phone for an hour.
I mean, went down the road of the
everybody.
Whole. Yep.
Because he was trending on Twitter yesterday. Yes. Call Me Brown was. I was like, oh, what's going on with him? And it was just like, oh, yeah. Gilbert Arenas, Matt Barnes, and a couple of other former teammates he really just laid into, apparently.
Laid into him.
So they must have all said stuff about him.
Yeah.
And then he, like, Steve Buscemi and Billy Madison is, like, got the list out, and he's got the lipstick, and he's crossing the names off. He's like, all right, got him.
And that's why he hit them with the whole, oh, y'all making basketball jokes. Well, let me go to the real issue with you people.
It is a good point.
And unloaded.
It is a good point, because, like, at a certain level, you're like, all right, I've played 12 years in the league.
Right.
Okay, wasn't great. Made $64 million. Was the number one pick. And you guys would want to keep talking about me being a bad basketball player. It's like, well, you're a bad husband. You're a bad person. You're a bad father. You're a bad this. You're
nailed
a bad
him.
Like, okay.
He skewered him.
Yeah, pretty good.
It was something.
Right.
By the way, speaking of parents, I did not realize that at the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies that went on at Mohegan Sun this weekend, that the parents of Kobe Bryant were apparently not at the ceremony.
Oh.
Now, the word is that the family of Kobe didn't get a personal invite. So they felt snubbed.
Does that normally happen? I don't know.
I'm going to say because of Kobe's death and the fact that, you know, his dad played basketball and all that, that it probably shouldn't. Now, why Vanessa didn't, like, that might become the next question, because Vanessa Bryant was graceful.